Hey there, happy holidays and happy Blackhawks victory. Welcome to our Blackhawks Crazy podcast as we tape after the Wednesday night victory. Yes, victory. 6-3 over the Pittsburgh Penguins to snap the long 8-game losing streak that this team has been suffering through, the fans have been suffering through, the entire organization has been suffering through, and your pre- and post-game host on WGN Radio have been suffering through. Chris Bowden, no, not really. I got the easy job out of all of this. I'm not up late at night trying to figure this thing out. Joined, as always, by the Chelsea blogger, the NHL.com correspondent, Scott King. And Scott, as we look back on the end of this losing streak, this team started out the way that they need to start out and actually went more than a half a first period without giving up a goal. But the good news is that they played well, probably better than they have at any time during this long streak, and they got rewarded for it with the type of way that they were playing from the outset. I guess they finally figured out what music combination to play, or, you know, which leg to put which pant leg to put your leg through first. They were wrestling with all this, but most importantly, they went out and played the way that Jeremy Colton has been pleading for them to play for so long.
Yeah, I have been up all night, every night, thinking about this, and I wrote a blog about it.
That's why you're yawning right now as we take
exactly that. A little behind the curtain for you. And I wrote about it yesterday. To me, everything really was the start, because you look at how they played in Winnipeg last night. So it would be Tuesday night in Winnipeg. A poor start, and then they had to try to claw their way back like they always have. But there were some good things in that game, and it was all about the starts. So this losing streak, you say it's all about every start not starting the right way, and there's some other things in there, but a lot of positive. And they start better tonight. They had to jump. They had to jump and get the two goals and lead right away is exactly what you needed.
It's not all about the base. It's all about the start. But let's be in making that point about how resilient that they are in coming back and getting back into these games that they fall behind in so quickly. Another equation of that, and Troy has said it, Eddie O has said it on the air, and even Jeremy Colleton said it afterwards, following that loss in Winnipeg. You get ahead 3 or 4 goals. Every team in the NHL it's human nature for them to put their foot off the gas a little bit, and that helps enable the Hawks to get back into games. Credit to the Hawks for not, tanking it and punching the clock and quitting in the second period of games. The effort is still there to a certain extent, but it also has to do with some of these other teams who, most of which, have a deeper, more talented roster at this point than the Blackhawks, letting their foot off the gas. And that has to certainly be considered in weighing all of this.
Yeah, and I just remembered that when Russ, scored his first goal of the hat trick, it became 2-1 towards the end of the first. And I guess you could throw this into starting the second, that Colton said, maybe last home game, anytime anything bad happens to us, we stop playing for a little bit. Maybe it was last night, actually, and I happened to see it on Tuesday night. So the good news was, they got the goal that made it 2-1. They let a guy get a hat trick, but they didn't stop playing. A couple of bad things happened, but they didn't stop playing. They didn't hang their heads. They played hard for the fullest 60 minutes we've probably seen all season, and made it count.
There were, this is not a perfect game by any means. There were some real, fundamental basic mistakes. Brent Seabrook made a couple of turnovers in this game that led to a couple of Russ goals. And there were other plays made that probably weren't the right ones that would lead to some Pittsburgh pressure. But the Blackhawks, by and large, were able to weather that particular storm. So the cleanup continues, and it's going to be interesting to see just what this one victory may do for them Friday night against a team that has scored rather easily against the Blackhawks, as they see Winnipeg again for the third time in the span of about, 15 or 16 days as they visit the United Center. And even though the fact they're home, that will be the second of 4 consecutive home games, the opponents aren't going to get any easier either, with San Jose coming in on Sunday and then the Nashville Predators on Tuesday to close things out. It's really a furious schedule here leading up to the holiday break after the 23rd, in which the entire league gets the Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the day after off. And the tests never stop coming. I'm just happy for the team's sake that you know, they were able to finally come through, probably take a deep breath, a sigh of relief, if you will, and for Jeremy and the coaching staff, because he hasn't been without a couple of subtle zingers in assessing this team as the problems have gone along. But I'm glad he's probably going to finally get a day away from it all on Thursday to spend some time with his family, as well as the rest of the coaching staff, Barry Smith and Don Granato, to finally exhale a little bit here.
Yeah, they've had the kind of schedule while dealing with all these things and trying to shake a losing streak that makes you just want to drink a bunch of eggnog when you finally get a couple of days off. So I missed Colleton trying to do some of the Penguins coverage. How did he sound in the clips?
On the post game on Wednesday?
Yes.
He was fine, and he was saying that they finally got rewarded. They played the right way, and it's something that he did not quite say. Obviously, after Tuesday's loss in Winnipeg, one of his comments after that loss was that the Jets came out and played like men, which
I didn't know if we were going to go there.
Yeah, which
that was a great quote.
Yeah, which you know is a tip of the hat, but at the same time, you know, it's not exactly putting your own team in the highest regard. And, you know, I'm glad after a couple of weeks he was very delicate in some of the things that he was saying when he first took over the job. But as this has gone along, you could tell more and more that he was getting tired of it. No, he's not going to be John Tortorella or anyone like that. But to let them know, hey, it's been 5 weeks here. We've tried to implement some things, and the very bare minimum you can give is an all-out effort from the jump, and that's something that's been lacking. And even though there is, I still think, personally, a talent gap between this Blackhawks roster and a lot of the teams that they play, the effort level and the focus has to be a lot better than it had been.
Yeah, that had to rise, and it did Wednesday night. And Wednesday morning, it seemed like a lot of people were in the media were kind of making a big deal out of that quote you just said. And you know, I think it's a couple of things. I don't think it was he didn't mean it too derogatory towards his team. I think just the simple fact that he's running out of words. It's this, they've been losing the same way for weeks now, until Wednesday night. So I think, you know, maybe to motivate his team a little bit, to give the Jets credit, like you said, but he was just running out of things to say.
And before the game on Wednesday, some roster moves were made, and the way this roster is, there's not a whole lot of flexibility that the personnel department can do with call-ups from Rockford and who they can send back down. You also almost have to make the opportunities to play with some new bodies and new faces come when a guy gets injured. And this was a case for the Blackhawks with Erik Gustafsson under the weather for a second straight game. Artem Anisimov, unfortunately, in concussion protocol after that hit by Shea Weber on Sunday against the Montreal Canadiens. And really unfortunate, because Anisimov was seemingly finding his game over the course of the past week or so. But that prompted an opportunity to send Alexander Fortain down, see what Carl Dahlstrom, a guy who was up last season, could do, see if his game has grown and he can contribute into what's been still a very porous defensive core at times, overall defensive game for this team at times, and also giving Dylan Sakura a look. And let's face it, one of the reasons that Dylan Sakura was sent down at the end of training camp, when a lot of people expected him to make this team, was his play away from the puck. And Jeremy Colleton said as much. Derek King, Colleton's successor in Rockford, said as much. Don't be in a hurry to make it to the NHL, because when you get there, we want you to stay there. It's not a finished product by any means, but at least Sakura, along with some increased production, had been showing signs of a greater commitment. To do that down in Rockford, it's going to have to reach an entirely different level up here with his size and the type of game that he has had to this point through his college career and the start of his professional career, that he's really going to have to be focused on that commitment to provide what this team is sorely lacking and sorely needs from really the start of the season up until this point.
Yeah, he's a friend of the podcast, right, from the convention, along with his brother, who was here, who came to watch him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I saw. He's talking to him. Looked like they were kind of breaking down the game in the tunnel here after. And I was telling our friend Jackie Redmond today on the NHL Network that, you know, Sakura was maybe possibly you could say the biggest disappointment at training camp, because I think everyone expected him to start the season in Chicago, and he got 3 assists in 5 games. Then last season looked good. I think people probably were on to his defensive game needing improvement, like you said. But you know, I think he looked pretty good Wednesday night. His line was one of those lines that was buzzing pretty early. A lot of good chances. So.
Yeah, and he showed a little bit more end-to-end responsibility. I thought it wasn't perfect by any means, but. He can't be a fourth line guy. He's going to have to be a top nine guy. He certainly has the capability of doing that, but it's a matter of maturing into the NHL game. On the other end of things, I thought Carl Dahlstrom, who I was impressed with when he first came up with his first handful of games here a year ago, his size, he can skate, he's not fancy, but he makes smart plays. And Jeremy Colleton relied on him a whole lot in this game against Pittsburgh, playing upwards of 22 minutes. Lots of key ice time when Pittsburgh had some power play opportunities. Granted, it was only 2, but putting him in some key situations, and he was out there on the ice toward the end when the Blackhawks were trying to protect that lead and ended up getting a couple of empty netters. Always liked him down there. I think the league kind of figured him out last year towards the end of that 11-game stint up here. Was a real solid contributor to Rockford's playoff run. And this is another one of those guys. If the Blackhawks are so inclined to send Henry Jokiharju to the World Junior Championships for a couple of weeks, and they're trying to look at other guys and make some decisions about the future of who might be a contributor on the blue line down the road, this is another guy that they might be able to take a longer look at. And, you know, so far, so good in what's been a short sample size after the game against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he got an assist in his season debut. I think his shot was the one that hit Martinson, right? It was fun. The writers were kind of debating, along with Martinson in the room, where the puck hit him. Martinson didn't even know. He thought maybe it hit him on the side. I watched it a couple times on his chest. Jimmy Greenfield, I think somebody else, thought his back. So, and he's like, I don't know, but you know, I scored my first NHL goal. It hit me in the groin.
Right.
So it was pretty funny.
I have to go back and look up that first NHL goal to see how he accomplished that. We were talking about Dylan Sakura, and when he showed up for work, actually I saw him here early on Wednesday morning with his sticks over his shoulder and his equipment bag as he lugged his way towards the Blackhawks locker room. And then a couple of hours before the game, he met with some reporters, and here's what Dylan Sakura had to say about how much growth he had and what he tried to do with the 26 games he spent in Rockford up until this point, getting 9 goals and 9 assists.
Just improving my game, you know, getting back to being myself, you know, playing with some confidence. You know, it was a great great thing going down there with, you know, Kinger taking over, and I think he did a good job of kind of letting us, you know, do our own thing and kind of feel ourselves out there. And I think, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I think we were getting better. And, you know, myself, I think, started feeling more confident in my play. And, you know, that's good. Yeah, I think I'm in a lot better spot. I think, you know, the adjustments to the pro hockey level is pretty tough, and kind of found that out the hard way. But, you know, I think I'm going to use the experience from 2 years ago now when I was up here, and obviously the time down in Rockford, and, you know, hopefully have a better jump start here.
How long do you feel like it took you to get over the fact that you started in Rockford and then, you know, crossing on your own game down there?
Yeah, I think pretty much once you go down there, I think you kind of realize that. And I think, you know, for me, it was important to go down there with a positive mindset. And, you know, I think some guys that go down there, they kind of were not too happy about it. But I think, you know, it's something that's going to benefit me in the long run. I think I got a lot from it. And, you know, improved my game and just getting adjusted to this level. And, you know, hopefully it'll show here. I think Jeremy's done a good job of when taking over, and I know it's tough for him, but I think, you know, having him down there and learning from him, and obviously coming up here, it's the same kind of systems and, you know, the same tactics that he was, you know, having with us down in Rockford there. So I think that's that'll help a lot, just making the adjustment a little easier.
Have you had to be patient, or has this been tough at all waiting for this opportunity?
I think, you know, it's obviously down there, it's a physical grind, but I think it's a mental thing more than anything. I think obviously there's times down there when you question yourself and you question your play or when you're going to come up and stuff like that, but I think it's important to just leave that behind. You know, you got to know you're here for a reason, and when you're called, then you got to be able to step up to the plate.
How much did having your brother down there to keep you on that track help?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, even from the first day, they had an extra spot in the house, so you move in with them, and, you know, we pretty much did everything everything together. You know, going to the rink, you know, it was a guy that I'm able to talk to about my play, and you know, it was awesome having there. And I hope continued success for them.
One thing Derek was asked about a week or so ago about your play, and he mentioned still needing to improve away from the puck. Has that been the main area of focus?
Yeah, that's something I focus on. I think, you know, when people kind of describe my game, I think sometimes you kind of say that he's all over the ice and stuff like that. I think that's something that I can bring to the table, you know, just on the forecheck, kind of relentless pressure and kind of someone that you can be noticed all over the ice and, you know, creating turnovers and whatnot.
Do you feel any pressure coming up here? Where I know there's a lot of expectations about you and fans wanting you to come up, and do you feel that at all?
I mean, I think you got to be human and feel a little bit of pressure, but I think that's good and that's part of the game, and that's part of the reason why you love to play the game. And obviously, it's a little magnifying here playing in Chicago with an organization like this, but I think, you know, that comes with the territory, and you know, ready for whatever happens.
Do you come up, you know, really determined to say, I'm never going back down, you know, once I'm up, I'm up, or do you have to be more, go with the flow than that?
Yeah, I think that was a big thing, you know, talking to Kinger over the last couple of weeks is he, you know, kind of said, don't be in a rush to get to the NHL because when you're up there, you don't want to come back. And that's something that I kind of focus on and tried to learn from. And, you know, hopefully that's the case.
How much does it help having Jeremy here and maybe having that communication aspect of where he knows exactly where you fit in?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, like I said, I really enjoyed my time down there when he was there. And I think, you know, he's just a very smart coach. He's got, he brings a lot to the table. And, you know, hopefully here I can kind of find my game here.
Sakura ends up playing, as I look at the score sheet here, a total of 9.5 minutes. All of them at even strength, got one shot off, had a couple of takeaways as well. So that's encouraging too. And he was spent time on a line for most of the night with David Kampf, who I think is one of these guys who is starting to grow into his game. Jeremy Colleton really likes him. And you know, Kampf is a guy he trusts and relies upon. He was also on a line with Brendan Perlini, who continues to be, you know, real quiet so far after the acquisition from the Arizona Coyotes, who's going on seven, eight games after a healthy scratch on Sunday against Montreal. Got a little under 11 minutes of ice time, was also sent to the penalty box in this game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I think while we're encouraged by what Dylan Strome has been able to do so far, still waiting on, you know, a guy a lot of people had the opinion may have been the more impressive of the acquisitions at the time based on his body of work so far in the NHL. You know, Perlini has 13 and 17 goal seasons under his belt, but it's really been a struggle here for him so far. And again, one thing Jeremy Colleton said that he wants more from Perlini is, the way he put it, RPMs. He wants his motor running without the puck, helping his line mates out, particularly in the defensive end. And we're still waiting to see some fruition on that. A couple of encouraging notes here from that Pittsburgh game as well. Jonathan Toews, 3 points. He's over 700 for his career. He put kind of the finishing touches with the empty netter and then the assist on the second empty netter in that game. So Jonathan Toews with a three-point night. Patrick Kane appears to be picking up a little bit more momentum in his offensive game, as he has a nice point streak going as well. And Alex DeBrincat with goals in back-to-back games. After having such a solid start to the season, he was real quiet for a long stretch. Actually, came into the Tuesday game against Winnipeg. So look back at some of the numbers. At that point, he had just 3 goals in his previous 21 games, 12 on the season, or 11 on the season. But he comes back with back-to-back goals against Winnipeg and then against Pittsburgh. So, you know, some of the top guns kind of getting back up to speed is something encouraging, and hope is something to build upon and continue at least through this homestand leading up to the holiday break.
I think DeBrincat had the prettiest goal on Wednesday. Skates around Olimata, puts it right under the crossbar. That was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And the Blackhawks even coming through on the power play too, because Pittsburgh's penalty kill had been lights out over the course of the last several games. The last 12 games going into Wednesday night's game, 27 of 29.
I wanted to say a quick thing about Perlini. I know he does need to do more, and yeah, people thought he was possibly the better player in that deal, at least, you know, with his track record, like you said, Chris. I thought he was one of the most noticeable guys, at least early in the first. I think you can credit some of that kind of surge the team. I thought he was very noticeable. I noticed him, but
he had a little jam in his game.
Yeah, but no, and then he wasn't as the game went on. But maybe there still might be some hope there.
Yeah, it's going to take some time, and you know, I had a little back and forth along with. Emily Kaplan was in that scrum. You were as well, Tracy Myers, in talking to Mike Sullivan, Pittsburgh's head coach. And here is a guy who was – you can't really say it's a similar situation as Jeremy Colleton, because Jeremy comes in with minimal head coaching experience. Mike Sullivan's a guy who previously, years ago, coached the Boston Bruins for a stretch and was Pittsburgh's head coach at their minor league affiliate a few years back at Wilkes-Barre. And got the promotion in the 2015-2016 season when the Penguins decided to step away from Mike Johnston. Mike Sullivan comes in and takes over and eventually ends up leading the team that season to the first of consecutive Stanley Cups that they had in 2016 and 2017. Now, granted, Mike Sullivan wasn't there for Pittsburgh's earlier run when they made the final in 2008, won the cup in 2009, but he's very familiar, even in the 3+ years he's on the job now, the fact that teams like the Blackhawks and like the Pittsburgh Penguins, these two teams that have won 3 Stanley Cups over the course of the past decade, have kind of tried to manage the same blueprint, and that's keeping 3 or 4 of their key core superstar players together, pay them, and have them be the anchors of your roster while, you know, mixing and matching the other puzzle pieces around it.
Right. Some moving parts around them.
Yeah. And it's constantly, and Stan Bowman did a great job of doing that in 2013 and 2015 after what he has to do following the 2010 championship. It's been much more of a challenge here over the last couple of years as the Blackhawks have not been able to A, make the playoffs, or B, when they make the playoffs, not last very long in it. So, obviously, we know the Twitterverse is all over Stan, you know, and people can have their opinions on that if they want to. They need to find some ways to vent and whatnot.
The last trade was good, not only for the Blackhawks, but for the Coyotes, too. Schmaltz have, 3 or 4 now?
Yeah, he's got 4, as does Dylan Strome. Schmaltz in 7 or 8 games, Dylan Strome now in 9 games, I think. So that part's encouraging. If Brendan Perlini can step up his game, you know, then I think that sways in the Blackhawks' favor. But getting back to Sullivan, you know, we talked to him a little bit about the challenges of constantly trying to find different pieces, effective pieces that will work and be difference makers around the superstars like Pittsburgh has with Crosby and Malkin and Letang and earlier Marc-Andre Fleury. The challenges of trying to find some of those pieces. And, you know, when we asked him about it ahead of Wednesday night's game, he would later expand on it a little bit, but he wanted to make sure heading into Wednesday night's game, despite an 8-game losing streak, the respect he had for the guys in the other locker room down the hallway.
When you look at the accomplished players that are in that dressing room, I think there's a certain level of respect there that they command, and it's deserving. And they're a good team. Every team has gone through their struggles this year. We're no different.
What's happening over there in the other locker room? They built their team a lot like for success, a lot like, you know, the Penguins did with the cornerstone pieces. But how important is refreshing that roster and continuing to get effective pieces to build around those cornerstone guys?
Well, I just think it's part of today's game within a salary cap world. It's very difficult for any organization to keep their teams intact for any length of time because, to a certain extent, you become a victim of your own success. And I think I think Chicago has done a remarkable job of reworking their lineup year in and year out around their core pieces to be competitive. And, that's been our challenge here in Pittsburgh as well. So, but I do think that's part of the reality of today's game and the economics. I think the way the business of the game is set up, I think it forces organizations to have to continue to look for, fresh people to come in and energize the environment. You know, like we talk a lot with our group, but just about trying to get some young guys on our roster every year that can come in, and usually they're on entry level contracts, so they, you know, from a salary cap standpoint, it's friendly in that regard. And but they also bring energy and things of that sort that I think inspire the veteran guys and the core guys. And so you know, with our experience here in Pittsburgh over the last couple of years, we've had a couple of guys every year that have come on, that have played their way onto the roster and that have been impact players for us. And I think that's an important part of trying to stay competitive year in and year out.
As it pertains to coaching, how difficult is it to come in as a coach with an already seasoned roster and inject your voice in there, kind of what's going on with Jeremy Colleton?
Well, it's always a challenge, you know, when you have an accomplished veteran core group. You know, it's a matter of, I think, just trying to instill your beliefs and your convictions, but that's the challenge when you take that type of a team over. You know, our team is very similar in that regard.
They have to have that line of communication though with Jim, and Jim is very aggressive. How open is that line of communication in terms of moves that you think you need to make?
With Jim Rutherford?
Yeah.
It's very open. We've got a very transparent relationship. You know, Jim and I talk daily and about our team. Jim's around our team all the time. He has a great feel for our team and what its needs are and the temperament of the group. And you know, I just think that's one of Jim's strengths. Is he's a great listener, but he's also his management style is he's just very transparent. The lines of communication are very open, and we talk daily.
Interesting stuff there from Mike Sullivan, and talking about his boss Jim Rutherford, who is, you know, kind of the opposite of what Stan Bowman is. Stan pretty much reserved in his way. Jim Rutherford isn't afraid to go out there, make some quotes out there in the media and the public, and wheel and deal. He's done it a couple of times here in bringing guys in like Marcus Pettersson in the trade with Anaheim, a couple of other moves here and there, trying to mix and match and find pieces to roster. Tanner Pearson was the other one in the trade with the LA Kings. So it's a lot of moving parts, more so than Stan Bowman and the Blackhawks in trying to find these right combinations while the quote-unquote window remains open. So I hope you enjoyed that. So we're bearing down pretty quickly here on Winter Classic 2019, South Bend, Notre Dame Stadium, Blackhawks and the Boston Bruins. And there's something really cool that's going to be a part of that here in downtown Chicago coming up. And it's called the Winter Classic Park. It's going to be right basically in the epicenter where a lot of people spend time during their holiday break. In Millennium Park, you got the rink, you got the bean. This Winter Classic Park is going to be right in Pritzker Pavilion there in Millennium Park. And judging by the things we've heard about it, Scott, you're excited to bring the family on down when it opens.
I am. I actually talked to some people from the NHL about it. I did a story on it for Chicago Magazine and stuff's going to be at the park, stuff they're going to do for Winter Classic, info on how to get there in the TV broadcast. So that's up on my social media. But, yes, I'm excited about what they're doing at J. Pritzker Pavilion. I am going to bring my family, I think. You know, there's a few days there, and I'm sure you'll hear more here later, and the info's out there, but a lot of fun stuff for fans. A lot of some merchandise and some games, and maybe the Stanley Cup might make an appearance.
Yep, yeah, and in fact it will. Let's get some more about that. I had a chance last week to sit down with Steve Mayer, who's the NHL Chief Content Officer and Executive Vice President. He's in charge of all these events, and leading up to the fact that the Winter Classic is in South Bend, but since, you know, Blackhawk fans obviously are so centralized here in Chicago, and some may or may not have tickets or make the trip down to South Bend for the Winter Classic. Wanted to give them the opportunity to get a taste of some of the excitement going on here in downtown Chicago. And I had a chance to catch up with Steve, again, as I said, last week to provide us some of the details of the Winter Classic Park here in downtown Chicago, as well as the lead up to the actual Winter Classic in South Bend. Here's Steve Mayer.
It's really exciting for the NHL, because one of the things when we decided to come to Notre Dame, we knew that the game itself was going to be 90 minutes away. So what could we do in Chicago for the Blackhawk fans that would be, you know, fun, unique? And we always knew that we had a fan activation around our outdoor games, whether it be Winter Classic or our Stadium Series. But, you know, we could do something in Chicago that fans could come to get a feel of the Winter Classic without actually having come to the game. And so why not Millennium Park, which is one of the great landmarks of Chicago? And so let's do it. So we're going to activate, you know, for families. One of the beauties is it's free. And so we hope we get those who are going to the game, but those who are not, because the experience of the Winter Classic is something special. So, like, for a family to come down, your kids could put a stick in their hand and shoot pucks. You can meet alumni from both the Blackhawks and the Bruins, although I think those in Chicago really might not be too interested in Bruin alumni.
That line will be shorter.
Yeah, but the one that's going to be really long, which, by the way, nobody seems to mind waiting in, is to get a picture with the Stanley Cup. So we'll have the Stanley Cup there. And there'll be music concerts. There's food. There's drink. There's a lot going on. It's really cool. We're going to start it on the 29th of December, 11 to 5, every single day. We're going to go from 11 to 5 leading up to the Winter Classic. So you've got Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's going to be great.
I would imagine in the previous years, I don't know, a couple years ago in St. Louis, last year around Citi Field, did you have something similar in those towns leading up to the Classic?
So we did. So, but in both cases, it was outside of the stadium. And although it wasn't for those who had tickets only, we felt like the majority of people that attended had tickets to the game. They came before the game, and then the next day or that day, they went inside the stadium. This is different, and it's a great opportunity for us. For us at the league, you know, we want to bring our sport, the NHL, to as many folks as possible, and to be able to activate in Chicago during a week where everybody's off, people are looking for things to do, this is perfect.
Yeah. And what can you say about it? I don't know if you had any other choices for locations. If you did, though, I would imagine this where it ends up is probably the number one since everybody's over there.
Yeah, and we know that you're going to just get people who are just roaming through, just checking out Chicago. They're here on vacation. They're just coming to downtown. So it's a perfect location. It's going to be great. You know, and there's going to be a lot to do. We actually think that a lot of people will come and then come back because it'll be a different experience every time, especially since, you know, you're going to get alumni, you're going to see the schedule, music that'll be a bit different. But it will be a great experience. And for us, it's going to be something to look at for the future as we start to announce games, which we're going to start to do beginning on January 1st. For the future, how are we going to activate these fan experiences in a different way to bring them to as many people as possible?
I'm not sure how much you're involved in the behind closed doors process of determining teams and locations for Winter Classic. Whether you are or not, I suppose it can't get much better than where this game is being played and the two franchises that are involved in it.
Well, that is a huge part of my job. And you know, there's a lot of discussion. It's not just me at the league level. In this case, you know, we always had earmarked Notre Dame. I had an amazing personal experience. Before I got to the NHL, I produced a season with Notre Dame football for Showtime, the TV show. And everything about Notre Dame, you know, the traditions, the organization, the people that work there, you know, just knew that that was a place we wanted to play. And then knew that the Blackhawks and the Bruins, two of the storied franchises, both, you know, with great roots to this game, the Winter Classic, and, you know, a little Irish feel to the game as well, doesn't hurt. You know, we love this matchup. You know, the beauty of the Winter Classic is such an event for a sports fan. Forget a hockey fan. It's one of those bucket list events that you want to go to, you want to experience. It doesn't really matter who's playing. It's the taking it all in. It's so unique. But for us to have the Bruins and the Blackhawks, it's okay. We're pretty happy with that.
And in terms of what's going on in South Bend, that putting the rink together, I think that's like T-minus 2 weeks before the actual event. They arrive on the 17th, and then the ice doctor starts working his magic.
Yes, yeah. So Dan Craig and team come in, and you know, I think that's one of the things that sometimes folks don't understand. It's not an overnight process. The other thing that I think takes a lot of time, and we really spend hours and hours on at the league level, is what's the field going to look like? You know, I think we've done a really good job, and my mantra is, like, let's make this one better than the last one. So last year at Winter Classic, you know, the theme was New York City, so we built city streets and put taxi cabs out there. I don't want to give away too much of what we're going to do at Notre Dame, but I will say this, that, you know, I always point to the fact that, you know, find me a blade of grass. Like, you know, we transform these stadiums and in the most unique way. And it's a lot of fun kind of creating. Talk about, you know, you mentioned, you know, how are the teams chosen? It's pretty simple when you only have 31 teams to choose from. We come up with hundreds of ideas that, you know, you remember the show with Homeland where you had that wall of just putting pictures up. Well, that's what we sort of do. We get like a feel of all the different directions we want to go in and eventually end up at the final product. But it's a fun, creative process, and we take a lot of time and really, really care about it. Because, again, the leave behind for our fans are what it all looks like and how different it was, especially when you're talking about Blackhawks and Bruins who have played in many of these games. Part of it is remembering what those field looked like and what the atmosphere was in the stadium that we played in that makes it different from place to place to place.
As long as you have a little heater for sideline radio reporters there during the game, that's probably the most. And I won't ask you who the Claire Danes and Manny Patinkin are of the NHL offices as far as that goes. Yeah. You've been involved in a lot of stuff, as you mentioned, TV specials, but also big entertainment shows, award shows. I don't know if it's a fair question in terms of how productions like this compare to the other things you've had experiences in, but I it's all unique, I'm sure.
You know, and listen, you're only good as your team. We've assembled a team of people. You know, we just recently held a meeting at Notre Dame where we bring in all the various departments that activate a game like this. Everything from the fire departments and the police departments of South Bend, transportation folks, bus companies, decor. You know, we put up decor in hotels. We sort of change facades of the building at Notre Dame. We've got hotels and hospitalities, all these various groups. And you sit there at the front of the room looking out at all these people, and you realize, wow, it takes an army to put these together. And we really have put together a team of the best in the business to put these games on. You know, there's, I think, 250 that are credentialed just on our team alone in order to operate the actual game itself. And that's what's amazing about this and all the experiences that I've had. You're only as good as your team, and we've got an amazing team that does this year in and year out. And the experience that they bring to each of these games makes these games unique and well-oiled productions.
And the Blackhawks are no strangers to this game or being in the national spotlight. It was 10 years ago that they played in the second Winter Classic over at Wrigley Field. But I imagine having to deal with this Blackhawks organization, they're certainly familiar with it. It's almost like working on autopilot with them.
Yeah, I'm not just saying this. They're amazing. From John all the way down, everybody that we deal with is so helpful. Yeah, and yes, the experience helps. But, you know, Wrigley Field was a launch pad, let's face it, for what became, you know, such a successful run. And now to see, this is my first Winter Classic experience with a home event here in Chicago. You know, to work with this team, they've experienced this over and over. They're such a pleasure to deal with. It's a great experience, and yes, there are running jokes. We've read them at the league level of like, oh, do the Blackhawks play indoors anymore? But we're honored to have the Blackhawks as a participant in this game and games to come.
Yeah, and as we tape this, we're in this new pop-up hockey house next door for the Blackhawks team store on Michigan Avenue, and it's a glorious space here. Very nice, high tech. You can get all your winter classic gear, which is just handsome, top notch stuff. But to be here in the epicenter to pop this up, I think people are still learning that it's here, but it'll be filling up pretty quick.
This is a wow. I mean, you know, I've traveled around and I've now completed the tour of all 31 cities. This is incredible. You know, to have a pop-up store and its location, to look around and to see, wow, we're getting closer. Mm-hmm. This game's around the corner, and it's a real tribute to the organization, what the folks in Chicago feel about the Blackhawks. This is a cool spot to come down to.
Final one here is you're also involved in the Road to the Winter Classic television series. Tell us a little about, I imagine they're going to probably start filming here this week in the 4-week run. Where can people find it and see it? And I've always enjoyed watching the behind the scenes stuff.
You know, it's actually funny. When we go to the team and say, hey, we would like you to participate in the next Winter Classic, one of the first questions is, are we going to be on the Road to Winter Classic? And the Blackhawks and the Bruins have both done it before. So we're going to start taping, as you said, this week. We'll go inside. Again, great access. Both teams so willing as a participant. It's going to be on NBC Sports Network. Starts December the 19th, Friday nights, 7 o'clock. And then every Friday night after that, although the final episode is going to be on a Sunday night, and it's going to be 1 hour after the game itself. You know, I think there's so many intriguing storylines. There always are with these. You know, certain guys pop. They become the personalities. I think new coach in Chicago makes it a really compelling episode, because I think for fans of the Blackhawks, it'll be your first real glimpse into his new world and how he's trying to establish culture. I'm sure that is something we're going to really focus on. In Boston, they have some injuries leading up to the game, and we're going to get a real inside glimpse at the rehab of Chara and Bergeron, and will they be ready to play at a Winter Classic? And I think those are intriguing storylines as we get closer and closer to the game. But yeah, Road to a Winter Classic is back, and we're excited to get started. Notre Dame, there's an aura, and I hope we do the school justice with how we present the game, because we are going to have nods throughout the game to the traditions of Notre Dame. We're going to bring football players back. The fact that they really love them, because, you know, the last 3 years they played a bowl game on January 1st. That wouldn't have been the best. So the fact that they had an undefeated season and they're playing in the championship, that's awesome. So, this one's exciting for everyone at the league. We're ready to go, and Notre Dame is going to be a great sight.
Just so the Bruins don't have gold in their helmets, replacing the yellow.
Hey, listen, there was a moment where we tried. Oh, yeah. We've talked about a lot of things creatively. Hopefully it's a good game, a beautiful day. Although we'll take a little snow. Mm-hmm. We like the snow. A little snow in the middle of the game adds to the whole aura.
As I mentioned in that interview with Steve, we did it at a place called the Hockey House, which is a pop-up store for the Winter Classic exclusively, merchandising for that a couple of doors south of the Blackhawks store on the corner of Michigan and Wacker. And it is a really cool space. They've done a lot of modern stuff with it in terms of big screens, and it's not just the Winter Classic jerseys. There's a bunch of other really cool merchandise, from Winter Classic pucks and sticks to other outerwear, innerwear, if you will. Not underwear, I don't think, but a lot of cool stuff leading up to the Winter Classic. If you have the opportunity, I know Blackhawk fans have probably already spent, the diehards spend a ton on merchandise, but there's really, if you like the black-white look that they're doing in this year's Winter Classic, there's a lot of neat stuff at the Hockey House, again, a couple of doors down. I think the exact address is 333 North Michigan on the east side there, a couple doors down from the Blackhawk store. Any final thoughts here as we wrap up? I did not get to see you
at a second intermission on Wednesday night, was it? I saw the plate of gyros and was it mini sandwiches?
Philly cheesesteak slider that you were not privy
on Sunday. And I went out to get some once my second intermission work was done, and all the sliders were gone. But that was a mighty hearty plate you had there on Sunday, and I think, you know, by tweeting out a picture of it, I think you were kind of bashful to follow up with more here during the second intermission on Wednesday.
No, that's not true. Chris accused me of hiding and eating kind of by where they serve the food, away from his sight in the press box. What happened was I had two fajitas I made. They're very good. And I went to go throw away my plate. Then I realized, you know what? They have some chips, too, to make your own nachos. So I had a couple nachos as the period was started. And Chris walked by me on his way to the bathroom, and I just started laughing because I knew he would think I was
Howard.
Tried to hide and shamefully eat by myself.
Yeah, so I grabbed a couple of the Brussels sprouts, which I love. So.
Oh, come on. You got to treat yourself to something. You're candy sometimes, right, at least?
Yeah, I do. I do have the Whoppers and the peanut M&Ms every once in a while to keep the energy levels up there. But we will have to keep working on a challenge between you and John Weideman at some point. We're going to have
Are they going to feed us the Winter Classic? Did you find out what they're serving?
I don't know.
I'm going to phone ahead.
Right.
Maybe bring
well,
my
see,
own.
There's going to be another instance because I apparently am going to be down on the ice or next to ice level.
You're going to need a telescope to look at me.
The entire game. So I'll just be searching for coffee or hot chocolate or something something like that to keep me warm. So
we might record something from there too. So everybody should listen just after the Winter Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Or go to WGNRadio.com. Probably
I think we'll have another podcast or two before.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to. You got to tease ahead. These kids are excited about the Winter Classic. In the black jerseys, they look great.
Pump it up. All right. Well,
yeah, we'll do a few before though.
Well, we do have. Three more games in this homestand to see what the menu is going to be in the second intermission. We have Friday, we have Sunday, we have Tuesday. Forget about the Jets, the Sharks, and the Predators. The most important thing here is what the second intermission menu is going to be. So we'll be keeping a close eye on that as you follow us on Twitter, as I know that's the most important thing you want to know from us, at Scott King Media, at Bowden Tweets. And we're just relieved that we have a victory we can talk about here. Still lots of work to do. Lots of digging out for this Blackhawks team to dig out from as they stand at 10-18-5 on the year. Still looking up at the rest of the entire NHL at this point. But at least we know it's not a 9-game losing streak. And hopefully nothing gets as bad as it's been over the course of the last couple of weeks. Anything else you want to talk about in terms of things you're working on? You mentioned
no,
Chicago.
No, I'm just kind of staying with the speed with Fox News.
You're just WGNRadio.com, Chelsea Blogger, NHL.com. The straight and narrow. Well, thank you for listening to this edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. You can follow along on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page. That's Blackhawks Crazy. Fill me in on this from
Facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy for the Facebook page.
It's like I have the brain cramp from too much eating. You're on top of that. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review. You can do that on iTunes. And again, thanks for joining us here. We had a little bit lengthy podcast this time around and hearing from Sakura and Sullivan and Steve Mayer about the Winter Classic Park downtown. Hope you guys get a chance to check that out and hope we have a couple more victories we can talk about here in the coming weeks, despite the ferocity of the schedule. That's a wrap after the 6-3 Hawks victory over the Pittsburgh Penguins on a Wednesday night. For Scott King, I'm Chris Bowden. Thanks as well to Joe Romano for pasting this all together once again. We'll talk to you next week.